is here, I believe, and we can move forward.
Are you Ali?
Thank you. I think we're okay. I think we have a quorum now.
You need one for you.
I think you needed it a couple days ago looking for stuff.
Well, my daughter finally got a place.
All right, let's, you need a roll call? Shall you okay? Okay, if you're okay, I'm okay. All right, we have a quorum in place. We'll proceed. All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm going to give you a brief update on the various projects and their status, starting with the Metro Orange Line. The project is coming along fairly well. We have some minor issues like working with the city and DWP, which is being worked out. Otherwise, the project is on track. We are still waiting for the final approval of the city regarding the various intersections where we cross. That's the update on the Orange Line. Moving next to the I-405 Sepulveda Improvement Project. The major issues here at this point are the right-of-way issues that we are working with VA, GSA, and also with the Salvation Army. It's been a long-going attempt by Caltrans and us to get these right-of-way issues settled. We have a lot of support from all the elected officials also to resolve these issues, but we are still not there yet. Delays as a result of that could be significant, so we are hoping we can resolve them before it gets to that point. On the Mulholland Bridge, we have reverted back to the old design, and our current plan is to demolish portion of the bridge starting in July of this year. We had a recent work stoppage by Fish and Games as a result of cutting down one of the trees which had a nest in it. And since then, we had all our employees trained, fully trained, and we have agreed for a vigorous monitoring program, and they have lifted the work stoppage, and we have resumed full work. That's the update on the 405.
We're all back to work there, right?
Yes, sir. We are working now.
We had a phone conference with Chief Counsel from Federal Highways and also Caltrans Chief Counsel to discuss the possibility of some type of an agreement where we would not take ownership of the VA property, but we would do a joint use lease, and that may satisfy the situation. So we're waiting to hear back from the VA whether they accept that or not. But recently the federal government passed a law that VA facilities do not have to give up any property, or they can't really give up any property or sell it or relinquish it, and that's what the issue is. So by doing the joint use, we would have to agree that we would be willing to, if we decide we don't want to have the freeway there anymore, we'd have to remove everything that's there and put it back to its natural state.
And there's no way, since it's a very localized member that created that legislation, there's no way to work with the author to... His mic's on. I don't know why it's not picking up, but his mic is on.
Oh, sorry. Lean way in. So that's what we're doing on the VA.
All right. Okay. Next.
Moving on to the congestion relief demonstration project. The work is proceeding well according to the schedule. Caltrans is planning to issue two new construction contracts on I-10 and 110. We are working with them to make sure they recognize our presence there, so that way we have a coordinated work effort, and both contractors will be working at night, so we need to have a good coordination there. Other than that, nothing much to report. We do have a Metrolink. We are working with them. Since we are parallel to them along I-10, there is a significant impact to our work and their operations, so we need to coordinate, which we are doing at this point. On the Crenshaw LAX Transit Corridor project, we completed the risk assessment with the FTA and also with the PMOC last month. We had a final public hearing on the yard site. Board decision is expected this month. I think it's going to the committee and to the full board. We are still working with the FAA regarding the trench along the Aviation Boulevard. We have three options: at grade, entrenched, and fully tunneled. So we have to come up with a solution that works for all, and we are fairly optimistic we will come up with a decent solution. We are also continuing to evaluate the transfer station at Expo and the alignment configuration there, and the negotiations with the railroad BNSF is continuing on. On the regional connector transit corridor project, we completed the March community update meetings. Meetings have been going fairly well. We have begun the technical coordination with all the utility agencies to see if we can do some early construction. We are proceeding with the geotechnical work on the project. On the subway to Westwood, we had several community meetings, very well attended, in March. We still have issues with Beverly Hills High School getting additional site access, and we are also working with the golf course to get an access. They did give us an access because of the rain. We had to postpone the geotechnical investigation. Other than that, work is proceeding well. That concludes my presentation, and we have Expo Phase 1. We have Eric Olson. Eric?
Something that came in last minute. I started emailing about it, and I wasn't able to open
it. Starting with Phase 1, again, our settlement agreement with our design-build contractor calls for substantial completion June 15th. In fact, we've started running trains out on the alignment as part of our test program. Under power, you'll see trains running along the alignment here over the next couple months as part of our testing program. There's still elements of work that we're watching closely to make sure that we can reach the substantial completion date, including the automatic train protection at the blue line tie-in, and then most importantly, all the different components of the Phase 1 testing. The June 15th substantial completion is the scope for our design-build contractor. There is also additional elements that are outside of the substantial completion date that should be completed towards the end of the year, which includes the completion of the storage facility and then the Farmdale station and the Culver City station, which were added late in the project. On project budget, the Los Angeles City Council, we received some good news, actually authorized $1.35 million in Measure R local return funding to the project to fund some second entrance at PICO and 23rd Street Station, as well as some assisted funding for a pedestrian plaza next to Fauché School that we're installing as a safety enhancement. Value engineering, we're processing change orders for elimination of crosswalk treatments, and we went back and did some additional analysis and were able to reduce the thickness of pavement sections at a few intersections, and we anticipate about a little over $1 million in savings there. And we, as part of our value engineering, reduced the scope of the storage facility, and that's currently out bidding now, so we hope to have those costs here in the next 30 days or so. On Phase 2, we have issued a notice of award to the joint venture Skanska Rados as our design-build contractor. That was done on March 22nd. Right now, we're waiting for insurance and bonds to come in. We anticipate that at the end of the month and look to issue a limited notice to proceed for them to start the design work and some of the upfront potholing activities and items such as that middle of next month. We've also selected a final design team for the maintenance facility in Santa Monica. That is Maintenance Design Group, so we're currently negotiating the contract with them and hope to give them notice to proceed sometime next month. The bridge that goes over Venice Boulevard, we have completed the 65% design, and that is now in with Caltrans and the City of LA for their review and comments. And that concludes my presentation.
Questions?
I do.
Okay, Mel? There you go.
I'm not sure which of you can answer this question, but with respect to the phase one of the expo line, can you tell me and give me just a little bit of background, because I've not been around here for a while, on the original budget for that line?
The original budget was around $640 million.
And at this point, where do you see the expenditures? What's the budget going to be now based on today's dollars?
Overall, $930
million. $930?
Yes.
So what would that be, about a 35% increase?
Yes, I think.
Is that pretty normal for these types of projects?
You know, it really depends on the circumstances. With this here, we had a couple things. One, we had a number of scope elements that were added to the project.
What does that mean?
A scope, I mean additional things. We've added three stations to the project. We've added a number of safety enhancements, including a sophisticated signaling system at the Blue Line tie-in. We also experienced really unprecedented escalation in construction prices after this budget was done in, you know, mid-2005 to 2007. So all of those things contributed to the increases in the budget here.
So let me see if I got it right. The reasons that the costs have escalated 35% is because of you had some stations that were added on after the project was approved?
Correct.
After the budget was approved?
Correct.
What was the reason behind, you know, those things not being done early on in the process instead of after the project has already been budgeted for?
Funding wasn't available at that point in time, and then the funding was secured in the future. I mean, one example is at Culver City at the Terminus station. It was going to be an interim at-grade station, which once phase two was authorized to begin, then that station would have been basically abandoned and an aerial station would have been built to go over Venice Boulevard. So we were able to secure additional state funding to build that and Metro authorized that funding, and so we incorporated that into the project. So, you know, we ended up, although it's more money, we ended up being able to be more efficient by not having to spend money on one station to demolish it to install another station in the future.
And the other two?
One is at Farmdale, and that was basically through our PUC application. It was protested, so we had extensive negotiations and an extensive process with PUC, LAUSD, and Metro to basically come up with an appropriate solution there. The solution that was developed was to add a station at Dorsey High School. So we incorporated that, I'd say, probably about 12 to 18 months ago into the project. The other was a station at USC Expo Park where funding wasn't available. We went through and did a significant analysis for special events traffic there and found that the station was necessary to handle special events, so funding was appropriated for that station also.
So the second station, the Farmdale station, there were some issues that came up that caused the agency to decide to add another station there?
That's correct.
Were those issues unforeseen? There was something that didn't come out in the environmental reports?
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So would you say the environmental report was flawed in some way?
I don't think the environmental report was flawed. I think it's part of the Public Utilities Commission approval process that made it difficult, that takes place after the environmental process. So although the environmental documents showed that what was being proposed was acceptable, when it went to the PUC and the public, it was protested and it ended up, I guess we ended up with an at-grade crossing, but it ended up what was proposed was not acceptable to those groups, and we ended up having to do it so we can get that crossing approved by the Public Utilities Commission.
And the third station?
The USC Expo Park station? Yeah, that was, as I said, we did some extensive analysis on special events there, and as part of that analysis, we found to handle special events at the Coliseum that that station was necessary, or would certainly make that process more efficient, so the decision was made to add that station in. It had actually been cleared in the environmental document as an option, again, if funding should become available. Funding did become available, so the station was added.
So that was an option that was in the environmental document that was approved?
That's correct. Both that and the Culver City Aerial Station were both options in the environmental document that could be incorporated into the project if funding became available.
Now, none of this project, if I recall, was a Measure R project. Is that correct? Not a Measure R funded project?
It's funded locally. I think it was before Measure R passed, so no, it's not. No.
Phase 2 is Measure R, Phase 1.
I'm talking about Phase 1, though, right?
Yeah,
so it was not?
No, it's not.
So the dollars that came about, are they going to be impacting any other projects that we have? These dollars that you went up from 600 and some million to 900 and some million, right?
Yes.
So my question is, does additional $300 million or $280 million, whatever it was, those dollars, are they going to impact any other projects in our system?
Not that I'm aware of. But Metro is probably better to answer that.
I think they, as to Phase 1 money, I don't know if Rainey is here, we have funded the project from a variety of sources, not Measure R. That's fine. We have to do that. I am unwilling to say that putting $300 million in this project doesn't have any impact on something else, because if we hadn't spent it on this, we would have spent it on something else. But we have to finish the project at this stage.
I'm just kind of concerned that, that we have a project. It's been budgeted for. You went through the environmental process, and then it goes 30% plus or above what you originally proposed. So I'm just wondering what lessons are learned from this, and are there any lessons learned from this?
Several lessons.
I think one thing you need to clarify, because he hasn't been here for a while, we had a very significant PUC issue.
Correct.
Forced a dramatic change in the route, but overpasses and things that we were forced to do by the PUC that had a dramatic increase in the cost. I mean, that's what needs to be pointed out here. Not it wasn't just a change order kind of a situation. It was an issue that was brought to us. We were forced to go to the PUC, lost it there, and increased the cost. I mean, that's a significant part of the $300 million. Am I correct?
That's correct, and that's the Farmdale issue that I...
Well, how much did that station cost? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
$20 million.
So that was $20 million, but... in the scope of things, that's less than 10% of what the cost overruns were. Is that correct?
Correct.
So I'm back to my question. You know, lessons learned. Are there any? Were there any? And going forward, we have a number of projects that the board has already authorized. And I'm just concerned that if we go along the path that we traveled on this project, that there's probably going to be a lot of projects on this lineup that's never going to get funded. So I'm just trying to figure out, from your perspective, what is it that we learned from this process, and how can we now begin to think forward with these other projects that have already been approved as well, and make sure that we don't let people end up coming on the short end of the stick because they happen to be lined up later on in the funding cycle. So can you help me?
Well, I think some important things that we're incorporating into Phase 2 is, one, as we said before, is really nailing down what the scope of the project is going to be and getting agreement and buy-in on that right up front, so we don't have changes as the project, once you have a contractor on board and the project is moving forward. So that's something we're looking at on Phase 2.
I just want to interject. I think it's extremely important that you sit down with Director Wilson and brief him on why we are and the lessons we did learn, We don't need to rehash those.
I'd be happy to do that.
It's very, but I think it's important that he knows that, because there are significant lessons that we learned in this that will not be duplicated as we move forward. That we didn't have on the east side, you know, and those kinds of things.
Can I maybe add to that? We've been discussing with the board since last summer on a variety of angles and facets a cost control policy and a set of processes under which we will come to the board at three major steps on all projects, rail projects I'm referring to, preliminary engineering, final design, and before we start construction. We will present a balanced budget. If there's an overage, we will identify that along with cost reductions, cost offsets to address that overrun. And the purpose of this is to create discipline and rigor against reporting to the board so that if a problem is occurring, we track it early on. The real point is to not allow us to design something which it turns out we can't afford. And I'm really arguing from the principle that all project advocates, all human beings want more. If we overrun the budgets on the early on measure R projects, we are defunding the later on project because there's only so much money in the measure R revenue stream. So therefore, we must have good cost management and cost control. Otherwise, we will be defunding projects. So this will be an ongoing thing that we will bring to you on all Measure R, on all rail projects in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. CEO. So I thought I heard you say that we have a number of measures that we put in place. There's discipline that we have now. We do the work early on instead of adding things later on that's not in the process. Is that essentially what you're saying? Okay. So if that's the case, and as I go through these steps and understanding more clearly what our projects are, what the priorities are, what the board has already agreed, I'm just going to be watchful of what we said we were going to do and what we actually do. Because my concern is that things were happening that we're doing that we didn't say we were going to do for whatever reason, and it's going to end up shortchanging the people who are not at the front end of the line. So I'm just hoping that you're going to be as vigilant as Mr. Leahy has said, and the chair has said that, you know, lessons were learned. So I just want to make sure that we really have learned those lessons as we have projects coming forward.
Yes.
Let me, Director, add to that. Unlike in the past, we have cooperative agreements now with both construction authorities on the Foothill Extension and on Expo 2. And what those involve, among other things, are a list of deliverables, which we didn't have really in the past, and a set of reviews by MTA staff, which will come to the board. Even though those projects are not being managed by the MTA, that will allow us to have insight into them so that if we do have a problem, we can identify it early on and take corrective actions.
And the appropriate place to identify that is at what point?
As possible.
No, that doesn't mean anything to me, early as possible. I mean, at what point is it in the engineering? Is it the draft of the engineering? Is it, you know, at the budget? What stage is that?
Come to you on preliminary design, before final design, and before construction.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to ask the staff these questions. Thank you.
Okay, we now have the Metro Gold Line Foothill Extension.
Yeah.
I'm
Supervisor
sorry.
Molina.
Eric?
Just because it comes to us, it's not incumbent upon us to.
Yes, ma'am.
If it's already over the budget at that point in time, wouldn't it be better that you would present those things, not us? We don't know.
Absolutely. We have no intention of bringing a problem, an unresolved problem, to the board. If there are issues, we will bring them. We're not going to punt to the board and say, you tell us how to solve the problem. We will come to you with recommendations on solving the problem.
But you're going to go through that process of where you evaluate all of
yes,
the
yes, ma'am. Yes, Director.
Okay.
Of course, the other issues are related to this. You know, it wasn't an all, weren't all involved in throughout the process because it was a separate authority. Right.
And I'm still not sure that even in this one and in phase two, that we've sort of corrected those things. I think it's a wait and see kind of a thing that's going on. That's why it's important for staff, as they have oversight on this, that it doesn't get so far along because the expo board is making decisions that by the time it comes to us, it's a done deal and you can't reverse it.
Correct. We're in alignment with what you're saying.
That's why it's
correct.
Important.
Yes.
Well, and exactly. And in fact, the situation we want to avoid is where we get a project 90% constructed or whatever, pick a number, and then we can't afford it because it's blown the budget. So that, thus, the imperative is exactly what you're saying.
It is right in Expo now.
Right. So we would want to avoid that.
They need to bring any significant change to the contract for us to review and approve before they can implement the change.
And they say it's a contract change. But at the same time, either the expo board has approved it, or they're already moving on it, and so it's we're almost doing it retroactively. So you need to monitor.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping.
We'll do that.
It's been the experience on the expo so far, is that it's way after the fact, after they've been doing all of this, and now they're telling us we approved it all. But we didn't approve it. In the early phases of it, we approved it way after the fact, and it was never presented as a problem or a change. Never presented that way.
No, I agree with you. In fact, when I first came back to the MTA 2 years ago.
Well, they claimed that because we got one of these board box things, they presented it to us, but at that time it didn't present it. There was no, the MTA folks didn't put any signals on it saying, look, you really got to watch what's going on. It's not until some of us started.
I was going to say, when I came back 2 years ago, I was told by an MTA person no longer employed here that Expo is not an MTA project. And I said, I beg your pardon. We are the owner. We are the bank. We are the operator and maintainer off into the future. It is our project. Now, it is true that we have two construction authorities who, in effect, act as our agents. But these are MTA-funded projects, and we need to be responsible for them.
And that's why we created that policy, and hopefully
yes.
It'll be finished. We need you to do it correctly. We'll look at it now.
Yeah, I would just note on all projects, highway and transit projects, you come to points where you have to make trade-offs. You have to make decisions as to trade-offs because you can't do everything perfectly.
Everywhere except here. Here they just come back for a new life of the budget, they're calling it now.
Well, the problem with if we don't manage prudently...
Life of the project. Life of the project.
If we don't manage prudently, we cannot complete the Measure R program, and that's a serious issue. So the discipline that I'm talking about has to apply to MTA-managed projects as well as to the construction authorities.
True. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next...
We have one more short presentation by the Metro Gold Line Foothill Extension. Mr. Chris Berner will do that.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I'm very pleased to inform you that on April 14th, Metro executed the agreement between Metro and BNSF to discontinue their freight service about 5 miles. That is a huge milestone on the project. We greatly appreciate the tremendous effort put forth by Metro staff. In particular, County Council Joyce Ching did a fabulous job in pushing that through to conclusion. And so we greatly appreciate the hard work that Metro did to accomplish that major milestone on the project. We have had a CEQA challenge of the SEIR and a separate legal challenge for the property acquisitions by a private property owner on the site for the maintenance facility. We have had, on March 31st, we had a settlement, a mandatory settlement agreement through the, a settlement conference through the CEQA challenge. As a result of that, we are somewhat hopeful that we're going to be able to reach a settlement with the private property owner and resolve both of those challenges and move forward with that. Ron Stamm of County Council representing Metro was at that settlement conference. We also are working to obtain the California Public Utility Commission approval of all the grade crossings. We have 37 crossings in total. We have actually approved 20. The slide's a little out of date. We've received 20. We are hopeful that other than two, the remaining will be approved by late May or early June. Two others will take a little bit longer, probably sometime around September. Also, we are working to establish the maintenance facility budget per the funding agreement. The funding agreement outlines a process in which we establish a budget for that facility that was presented at the Planning and Programming Committee yesterday. And will be forwarded to the board later this month. So that concludes my presentation, unless there are any questions.
The only question I was just asking, Art, why would you just now be doing a budget for the M&O facility?
That was the way the we contemplated it in the funding agreement, that we would establish the budget once the environmental process was completed.
Oh, I see.
So we knew where the site was, and you could
establish the footprint and everything else.
Right.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Any other questions? All right. Next, I believe Mr. Miles has a report. Am I correct?
Okay.
Mike, if I can just note, we're doing now what Orange County and San Diego have done for a period of years, which is seeking to get a close relationship between Caltrans and, in this case, the LA Metro LAMTA. And so increasingly, as the funding comes through the counties, and obviously we have responsibility for Measure R projects, which includes 15 highway projects, we asked Director Miles to come forward periodically and make reports to the board as to project status and progress. So thank you, Michael.
Get the presentation up.
Mike, did you put it on here?
Up at the top in the middle.
Where? Oh.
I don't see. 5 Metro board right in the middle of the top.
Oh, right there. Got it.
Okay. Some technical difficulties. Well, good morning, directors and chairperson. I'm going to be here today, and I'm going to present the first of many presentations that we're going to do monthly updates on. And my first one is going to be the I-5 Southern Corridor Improvement Projects from Orange County Line to the Interstate 605. Go to slide 2. This map shows the 6 segments that make up the I-5 Southern Corridor. The project is divided into 5 segments, plus the standalone Carmenita Interchange Improvement. The I-5 Corridor Improvement Project will widen the existing freeway and construct 1 carpool lane and 1 mixed flow lane in each direction, spanning 6.8 miles from Orange County Line to the Interstate 605. That's shown on the map. The cities in this project include Norwalk, Santa Fe Springs, Downey, La Mirada, and Cerritos. As the map shows, Carmenita, which is the gray one in the middle, is a standalone segment. And the corridors, so that's a standalone. The corridor's lane configuration on the rest of it will consist of 8 general purpose lanes, 2 HOV lanes, and 4 standard width shoulders ranging from 11 to 15 feet. The 5 segments of the corridor improvement project are segment 1, shown in orange, which is Alondra Avenue overcrossing, segment 2 in purple, the Valley View Avenue interchange, and in segment 3 in green, Shoemaker, Rosecrans, and Bloomfield bridges,
which we call Shoemaker. And then segment four, shown in pink, is the Silver Bow Avenue and Ord and Day Road interchange. It's called the Imperial Highway. And then segment five, shown in turquoise, is the Florence Avenue interchange. The first project to go to construction is the Carmenita, the gray pictured as in the gray line up here. The second project going to construction is Alondra, the orange. The third project going to construction is Shoemaker, the green. The fourth project going to construction is Imperial Highway. And the fifth project going to construction is the Valley View. And the sixth project and final is the Florence interchange. This was one continuous project, and then we did an engineering value analysis of it, and it was determined that it would be best to split the project into the five segments in order to facilitate the construction. Because of the size of the project, it would have been very complex for one contract to administer this. As we move forward, I'll break down each of the projects and update you on details of each project, including the limits, cost, right-of-way status, construction start and end dates, and any major or project risks that we see. So go to slide three. These are the delivery strategies. CMIA funds will be used for the first three segments going to construction. Due to the time limits on the CIMA funding, we moved those into the first segments to assure that we were able to fully utilize those funds and we weren't in risk of losing them. And segments one, three, and four, Alondra and Shoemaker and Imperial Highway. Proposition C and other funds will be used for these segments with more complex right-of-way issues. Because they take longer to resolve, we move the more complex issues to the end of the projects so that we'd have more time to accomplish them. And then also, some of the things that we're doing is we're modifying the Caltrans right-of-way process to ensure that we're able to acquire all the right-of-way. We had an issue with the county court system where they had eliminated Department 59 due to budget constraints, and the eminent domain cases were being spread throughout the court. So we've met with CTC Commissioner Yvonne Burke and also Fran Inman, and we made visits with the county court system, and we've now gotten some training for the judges so they know how to handle the eminent domain cases. One of the issues that we're having also is the streamline the entry permit process for site investigations, because in this corridor there's quite a bit of old industrial facilities and the hazardous waste, and so a lot of the owners are prohibiting us from getting on their property to do testing for hazardous waste prior to the appraisals, because once they're made aware that there's hazardous waste on it, then they become responsible for the cleanup of it. So we have tried to streamline that, and we're working very diligently with the owners to get on the property to do a lot of the investigations. We've done some outreach plans with utility companies to expedite the relocations of utilities in these areas. And as part of our right-of-way effort, we've brought people from Northern California down to Southern California to work on the right-of-way process, and we've also received help and are receiving help from Metro on our right-of-way acquisitions. Metro is going to be handling the commercial full-take parcels. And also we have District 11 out of San Diego, legal staff helping us with the eminent domain cases to ensure that we don't run into a lot of problems. So if we could go to slide four. This is an overview of the schedule. The Carmenita Road interchange was advertised on March 21st, and the bids are targeted to be open on May 12th. It's the first project to go into construction by this summer. The fall segment one, Alondra, will begin construction. The design is now 100% complete. We have 85% of the right-of-way secured. Next August in 2012, construction will begin on two segments, segment three, Shoemaker, and segment four, Imperial Highway. Shoemaker has 95% of its design completed. Right-of-way is currently at 60% completion. Imperial has 35% more design work to complete and 70% more right-of-way to finalize within the next 12 months. Segment 2, Valley View Interchange, has completed half of its design, while right-of-way is at 20% of its total before construction begins 2 years from now. The final segment, segment 5, Florence Avenue Interchange, is 45% complete in design and 40% of its right-of-way is secured. We're on schedule for all six segments. As you can see, within 2 years, by 2013, the entire corridor will be under construction at the same time. Go to slide 5. This is the funding slide. Excluding the Carmenita Road Interchange, the total corridor improvement will be $1.24 billion. $387 million is from the Corridor Mobility Improvement Account. That's a CIMA funding, which has the time limit on it. So we're trying to make sure that we utilize those funds and don't lose them. $321 million is from the STIP program. and $265 million is from Proposition C, $125 million is from the Transit Cooperative Research Program, and then $77.4 million is from Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Improvement. And then to round it out, $62.6 million is from the State and Local Transportation Partnership. Go to right now we're on schedule and within budget, and back in 2009, Metro approved $264 million for the I-5 corridor improvement project, and that fund is a contingency at this point in case things go bad. But the way we're looking right now is we're going to live within the base budget, and we may not have to use that contingency funding that Metro approved. And so based on the risk plan that we have developed for this project, the main areas of concern as far as project risks go are construction, right-of-way, and hazardous waste. And as I mentioned prior, there's a number of industrial facilities and gas stations in that area that have potential for hazardous waste, so we're working very closely with our hazardous waste people and investigators to make sure we identify those locations and minimize our cost to clean them up. One of the things that I want to touch on, if CIMA funding is lost due to the bond sale in the fall, the project would have to be downscoped to only three segments because that's what we have money for. And so we're very concerned about whether the bonds are going to sell, and that's something that we talked about earlier. Yes,
yeah, I mean, if that's an issue for all of us in our projects, my concern, why would you, at some point there would be a bond sale, I mean, it impacts everything, why would you downscope it until you knew? I mean, just because it's not sold in the fall, so I mean, because you can't rescope it once you downscope it.
That would be one of the alternatives if we get to a point where the funding is not available and we don't have it in the foreseeable future, we would have to downscope the project. That would be our only alternative.
Well, yeah, we'd have a lot worse
money.
We'd have a lot worse decision to make in our deals than just downscoping. So, okay. I mean, I don't know how you downscope that project though, but I guess that's what
yeah,
I
mean. Up with
that. You make it a little narrow, a little road, just like a bicycle traffic only.
Eliminate a segment or, you know, I don't know. We'd have to.
We already got the segment eliminated on the other side of that thing. It goes down to one lane.
Yeah. Okay, can we go to slide 7, and I'll present each project individually. The Carmenita Road Interchange project limits is from Santa Fe and Norwalk, just north of Alondra Boulevard to Shoemaker Avenue. It's approximately 1.2 miles in length. The number of right-of-way parcels that we acquired were 64. The capital costs were $329 million. Support cost was $51 million, and total cost is $380 million. The work involves removing the existing two-lane steel structure, constructing a new eight-lane concrete structure with tight diamond ramps, improving the frontage roads. Right-of-way now is 95% complete. Design was completed in 2009, and the project was advertised on March 20. First, and bids are targeted to be open in May, so we're on schedule for that project. At risk is the, again, utility relocations is a risk on this particular project. Segment one, which would be the next segment to go, it's the Alondra Boulevard. Project limit is Santa Fe Springs and La Mirada from North Fort Coyote Creek overcrossing to Marquette Avenue. Project is 0.3 miles. There's eight parcels of right-of-way. Capital is $95.5 million. Support was $14 million, and the total cost is $109.5 million. This particular project will widening to add one HOV lane and one mixed flow lane in each direction, reconstruct three structures, Alondra Boulevard overcrossing, Alondra Coyote Creek Bridge, and the North Fork Coyote Creek Bridge will be reconstructed. And also we're going to reconstruct adjacent frontage roads. Project status is it's 100% designed, 80% of the right-of-way is complete. It's due to begin construction in 2011 and end construction in June of 2015. Again, utility relocations are an issue for us. Oh. So segment two is the Valley View Interchange. These are not in the order of construction. No, you had it right.
Oh, you Valley View?
Yep. Okay, this is the this project is number five. It's this segment to begin construction. Project limits are La Mirada, Santa Fe Springs, and Cerritos from Atesia Boulevard to Coyote Creek. Length is 1.44 miles, 64 parcels. Capital cost, $374.9 million. Support, $41 million, for a total of $416 million. The works involves widening to add one HOV lane and one mixed flow lane in each direction, reconstruction of two structures, Valley View Avenue overcrossing and the Coyote Creek Bridge. Significant interchange improvements will be made at Valley View Avenue and Artesia Boulevard. And they're also going to reconstruct the adjacent frontage roads. Project status is at 60% designed, 20% of the right-of-way is complete, and it begins construction in June of 2013 with end of construction in 2016. This particular segment has possible hazardous waste issues and then timely possession of the parcels, and also, again, utility relocations. Go to slide 10. This is segment 3. Project limits, this is the Shoemaker Avenue interchange. It's in Norwalk and Santa Fe Springs from Shoemaker Avenue to Silver Bow Avenue. It's approximately 1.24 miles. There's 42 parcels, $181 million of capital, $33 million of support for a total of $214. This work involves widening I-5 to add one HOV lane and one mixed flow lane in each direction, widening five structures, Shoemaker Avenue overcrossing, Rosecrans Avenue undercrossing, Bloomfield Avenue overcrossing. It constructs a pedestrian overcrossing at Silver Bow Avenue, and then significant interchange improvements to be made at Rosecrans Avenues. It also constructs a southbound on-ramp to Rosecrans Avenue and upgrading the inside and outside shoulder to standard width. Project is 95% complete. Right-of-way is at 60%. It's due to start construction in August of 2012 and end in 2016. On this project, it's mainly utility relocations that would be an issue. The next project is Norwalk from Silver Bow Avenue to Orr and Day Road, 1.89 miles. Number of right-of-way parcels is 195. Widening to I-5 and one HOV lane and one mixed flow lane in each direction. We're also going to widen four structures, San Antonio Avenue overcrossing or undercrossing, Imperial Highway undercrossing, Pioneer Boulevard undercrossing, Orr and Day Road overhead and undercrossing. Constructing a southbound off-ramp at the Pioneer Avenue undercrossing and upgrading the inside and out shoulders to standard width. Cost is $262 million, support is $39 million, for a total of $303. Next slide. This is the Florence Avenue segment. It's project limits Santa Fe Springs, Norwalk, and Downey from north of Orr and Day Road overhead to the south to the San Gabriel River Bridge at the 605. Project length is 1.71 miles. Number of parcels is 56. Cost is 168. Support is 30 million, and total cost is 198 million. The work includes widening the I-5 to add one HOV lane and one mixed flow lane in each direction, widening two structures, Florence Avenue overhead, and at Orr Street and Day Road, constructing a pedestrian overcrossing at Celia Street, and significant interchange improvements will be made at Pioneer Boulevard and Florence Avenue. We're also going to construct a northbound on-ramp at Florence Avenue. It's going to upgrade the inside and outside shoulders to a standard width. Project status is design is 45%, right-of-way is 40%. We've scheduled to begin construction in June of 2013 and end construction in December of 2016. Again, timely possession of the parcels is critical to this project, and also utility relocation issues. This whole project really hinges on right-of-way. It has a tremendous amount of right-of-way that we have to acquire, and we believe that we've put necessary provisions in place to make sure that we acquire the right-of-way by using people from Northern California and also MTA and our Southern Legal Division to help us.
Is there anything else that we need to do to make sure that that's successful?
We've been meeting with the county court system with, like I mentioned, Commissioner Burke. And we believe that we have the courts in place. When they shut down Department 59, some of the judges were sending our eminent domain cases to small claims court. So we're working to get those put back into the regular court system to make sure that we can get right of entry and possession. So at this time, I think we're doing okay, but any help that you could give us would be appreciated.
Well, let us know what you need. I think apropos of the discussion a moment ago on rail lines, the board would be very interested in learning early on where a threat to a project might exist and what remediation or assistance we can offer to avoid that problem.
Any other questions on this?
Yes.
Good report, sir. I have a question for you. I've noticed that on almost every PowerPoint slide that you had, that you presented today, at the bottom of it there is something that's rather consistent, and that is utility relocation issue, and you always associate that with risk. And I'm wondering if there's a reason why you do that?
The reason we do it is it's we have to deal with the utilities. We have to identify where they're at. We have to arrange with them to relocate. And it's timely, and then we go into their queue of work so that we're basically, for lack of a better word, at the mercy of the public utility that we have to relocate. So it could be electricity, it could be gas, it could be water, sewage, whatever it is. We have to work with that particular utility to get those things relocated, and it just takes time to go through the process. So they are a potential risk that we try to mitigate by having early discussions with them and making them aware of where we plan on putting things. But again, as the design progresses, that's when we bring them in, as early as we can.
You're finding that the utility piece is the one that can slow up your project or stop your project more than most other things? Because I noticed that timely possession of parcels was on a lot of them, but utility relocation was on almost all of them.
Like I say, it's always a risk because sometimes you don't know what utility is there until you actually start construction and you discover it. We try to identify
a lot of bad maps too sometimes.
Pardon me?
Drawings are sometimes they've changed, they've relocated without knowledge and without updating the
builds aren't up to date or correct. 405 was a good example of a utility relocation. Part of the freeway over to avoid a 72-inch water line. So that was a cost to the project, and in this case there could be additional costs for, you know, mitigating some of the utility relocations.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, may I direct a question to Mr. Murthy?
Yes.
Sir, as Mr. Miles has just articulated, you know, they incorporate utility relocation as an important part of their budgeting of their time and dollars. And I'd like to know, on our side, from the construction side, particularly the rail and other construction activities that we have, do you have that as a checkpoint on all your projects as well?
Yes, sir. We do.
And what are you doing to avoid disruptions based on public utilities?
One of the things we, for example, on the 405 contract we did was we gave the contractor 60 days as soon as the notice to proceed was given to go ahead and do the potholing to the extent needed and identify all the utilities that are there. And if they find anything other than what we have already shown on our drawings, and if they do impact the construction, then we will sit down and negotiate with them for any changes upfront. So far, we have been okay on 405. They did not find, to my knowledge, anything other than what we had identified before. So we are going to follow that kind of procedure on most of the contracts that we are going to award.
Do you do that also, sir, on the rail projects too?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay. So just so I understand how it all works, the timing and the sequence.
Yes, sir.
At what point do you know that you need to look into the utility and then begin to reach out to the whomever the jurisdiction happens to be for that utility? Is it during the planning and engineering? Is it environmental? What point are you at in the construction process?
In two steps we do that. During the draft environmental impact statement period, we collect all the as-built information from the various agencies and see what impact they have to our alignment, also as well as the station locations. Then we start dealing with the agencies to see whether we can leave it in place, protected, or we have to relocate them. And then in the next step, during preliminary engineering, we will get into details of what is the protection needed, how much relocation is required, and what the cost of that is going to be. So we have that step. And the third step, when we award the final contract, we will have this provision to go do early test pits as needed all over this place to make sure that we have not missed anything that impacts our construction.
Now, did you do that in the leg one of the expo line?
No, sir, not to my knowledge.
Why is that? Why is that different? That's
way before my time. I cannot answer that question.
Thank you.
Just to add to that, typically when during the design phase, we go out and do potholing.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Just to add to the utility locations, during the design phase, we go out and do what we call potholing, and we actually dig and look for utilities so that we can identify them prior to our design.
Mr. Murphy, did you hear what he said?
Pardon me?
Potholing that we do to identify the locations of utilities during design.
Right.
You do that as well?
Yes, sir. I do.
Sure.
Only because it's odd. We're going to be building so much. There should be standard policies as to what is our oversight and review. Like, I didn't do it because I wasn't here before. It's not a real good answer for us, for some of us, unfortunately, who were here. If there should be a set of policies as to how, so it's consistent, in case he's not here in 10 years, these projects are...
I don't think he meant he was not here, but, I mean, the fact was, the concern you raised earlier, and that was that it was done under the Expo Authority, not...
I don't think that's what he said. That's why I'm curious. But even then...
Phase one.
Projects. Whether they're sound walls... should be a consistent kind of review or protocol set of reviews of when and point. We have to trust you that you're assuring us of this, and it's really unfortunate that, you know, it wasn't done. I don't think even under Expo at any point in time did anybody say, by the way, you are just blindly paying for this. You will have no review. I know that was never said to us, okay? So my point is that I just think whatever it is, no matter what it is, because right now Caltrans is operating, this is operating under us, and which it never used to before. And so I think there should be, whatever time MTA money is used or anything, there should be a standard set of protocols that tell us this is what we need to review. I think one of the worst things, I don't mean to be disrespectful to finding a water pipe or a major water thing. I mean, come on, it was somebody should have known. I mean, even the design of going through the VA, I mean, that law's been there for a while. It didn't pop up after the design.
The law is new. It's less than a year old
on
the VA. The water line we found during our investigation, so we relocated it before the water line became an issue.
That's what you meant by working with the author? And why was it grabbed?
The law?
The VA property that they wanted to develop and housing.
So the congressman put that thing in there specifically?
Stop it.
Is this the same
commercial
congressman?
Commercial development?
I think so. Well, there's something. I mean, these are things
we don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that some guy in Kansas that did it, right? And you're telling me, oh, it's here local.
Yeah, local.
Well, that's even more common. Because, again, these things we don't know as to how they're doing. So all we know is when we're getting a construction committee, we come across this. I know in just the east side that the utility relocation was a nightmare for us on a regular basis. And it was strange to me that their engineers and everybody else didn't know where things were and what was going on. And now we have to dig deeper, and now we have to go. All of these were additional. I'm just saying there should be a set of protocols that people should
follow. Well, at least for the oversight, I mean, from the standpoint of the utility relocation, it's been whether it be Metro, whether it be Caltrans, whether it be public works projects in the county, there are issues. And the saddest thing is that most of them are design issues as it relates to upgrading the documents of the original design, where utilities have been actually moved, but the documents pertaining to that have not been updated, or the movement has not been placed in the file behind the existing document of utility location. And it presents a very, very significant problem. The other question I have, when you look for support as it relates to the right-of-way, you know, the possession of parcels, you know, I mean, it's going to be a struggle because as you know, and I continue to say, I mean, my fight has always been this project is so far behind, and so many years later, a lot of political leadership out in that particular area lost their political seats because they, you know, they supported the eminent domain and, you know, the whole thing along there, and nothing ever happened. So we do have some credibility issues that we do have to rebuild if we're going to move forward on this as well, too, before you get, you know, that kind of help.
Director, I think we're on the same path. We've had last month's year, we've created more visibility for both construction authorities. We're now doing the same thing on the highway projects. You're right, we are a stakeholder, we're a funder, we're the bank, and to do our proper responsibility, we should have the sorts of things that you've just cited. I look forward to developing that over a period of time with the board.
And I believe that Supervisor Molina's motion was very appropriate at the time as it related to what happened on phase one of the expo and our inability to either know about or get information, and that motion has remedied that, and so whatever it takes. So. Okay? Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, next... Damian Goodman, speaking item. Is this the right item? Item two, okay. Damian, are you here for speaking item two? I said item two here, so okay. All right, we'll go to item number three, and
yes, sir.
One of Supervisor Molina's favorite, the LOP.
Item number three is requesting authorization to establish life of project budget cost for four sound wall projects. Caltrans is the designer for all of these packages. We have done an independent constructability review of those, and along with the Caltrans engineers, we have also identified additional work that we need to do geotechnically to make sure the soil information is known to the contractor. And so we have built up the estimate based on the checklist that we showed you in March, construction committee, all the things that we are going to do before we award the construction contract. So with all that, we have established budgets for these four projects. Package number five is on the I-405 from Devonshire to Mission Boulevard. Package six, I-405, San Gabriel River to Atherton in the city of Long Beach. And number seven is on 134 from Cahuenga Boulevard to Riverside. And the last one, number eight, is from on I-605, north of Slauson to south of Obregon Street in the city of Whittier. The total cost of all this project is $75 million, $670,000. So we request approval to.
Okay. Are there any questions as it relates to the sound wall?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'm asking something I'm not sure how can. Right now, these are estimated amounts, right? 28 point whatever, right? But when it comes back to us, and let's say it comes in for 37, will we see it this way? Will I know that it's package 5 that was estimated at 28.8, or will I just see it for 37 million?
We have worked with the Caltrans engineers, and they have done the soil investigation. And
No. The question is, if it's going to cost more than $28 million,
right,
will it come back to through the committee, through the board?
We have to come back to it. We have no choice. One of the things we have to do on the cost containment.
If there's an overrun, we'll come back. We'll say the original budget was 28. There's an overrun. Now it's 37. We request 9 more million.
Yeah.
But we're going to be fully disclosing on that.
Absolutely. We will have to come back to the board. We have no other way to do it.
All right.
I take it this is the budgeted amount. This is all you have money for. So if it came in for $37 million, then you wouldn't have enough money.
If we had to come in for $37 million, we'd have to request the additional funding from the board.
Well, you can take it a step further. Let's say that this one came in at 37, as Supervisor Molina is indicating. And I'm just going to go to extreme example. And on item package number 5, it came in at $20 million. So you had an $8 million savings and a $9 million overrun. You wouldn't come back and just, in other words, you wouldn't take the money from the savings to put towards an overrun without us.
No.
Okay.
No.
We will be coming back to the board.
Okay, great.
I should say to you, I think that I want to just communicate that the pain associated with coming back here to ask for more money is a very great motivator. That self-discipline and having to come back here and ask for money really energizes people to do their very best to bring in projects on budget, because no one likes being drawn over the coals. So we're going to do our level best. In the event there's a problem, it will be fully disclosed.
Okay.
One of the, you know, you asked about lessons learned, Director Wilson asked earlier. One of the lessons we learned in Wardy was is that we have to use bigger augers when we do our soil testing. We have to be more specific in our spec on what happens if there are larger boulders in the fill material. So we learned our lesson, and we tend to try to design things with piles because they're cheaper, and if we needed to go to a footing, then we will initially. So that it should identify the costs up front and not during the project itself. And that's what we've done on these ones.
Okay. Very good. Entertain a motion. I'll move it if there's a second. Without objection, so order, be moved to full board. Okay. Item number four.
Item number four has four parts to it. In keeping with the directive from CEO to engage small businesses as much as possible, we have come up with smaller contracts which can be performed by small business associates. And some of the projects that we have chosen are within $5 million worth of consulting help. So the first one we are requesting approval is for two sound wall projects, sound wall 5 and number 7, to be awarded to Athale Consulting Engineering Services. These were all the firms that we are presenting today were based on qualification selections, and the first contract for Athale is not to exceed $3.7 million. It includes two one-year options. And we are also requesting that the CEO be authorized to execute individual task orders within the board approved authority. And lastly, we are saying if we cannot negotiate with this firm, the CEO be authorized to go to the next highest qualified firm so we can negotiate and get the contract. So that's number one.
I'd like to applaud the department for doing this. I think this is one of the things that we always talk about and we don't do enough of it, is to break down some of these contracts so that small business people can apply. And I hope that they're successful in every single way, because we need to do more of this for the small business people.
We'll do that.
Okay, we have several members of the public. Ali from TBAC, followed by Robert Delgado, followed by Ashok Athale.
Good afternoon. I believe Director TBAC have faxed you or emailed you a letter this morning. This item took us by surprise, to be honest with you, and there's a lot of irregularities that we have seen. Matter of fact, the board letters were not posted on the website. I've got a copy of the letter from TBAC, if I may submit it to you real quick. But basically it says, and if I may real quick, says, We just became aware that the above reference procurements are intended to be awarded without following the proper procedures. There has been no interviews for these procurement. Basically, Mr. Doug Failing and his group decided to just review the proposals and decide who the best qualified firm is. I believe, and I strongly believe, that this is wrong. This is the wrong policy. The issue is not contracting with the small businesses. The issue is following procedures. This is how Caltrans does business. And Metro, and I'm hoping Metro is not a Caltrans agency. I also want to mention to you, okay, just this morning when I was able to review these documents, that they were not posted.
Give us for the record what you have there and be part of the public process. Mr. Delgado?
Well, I just wanted to come up here and say congratulations to Metro. Fantastic RFP, I mean, fantastic procurements. Little hesitated on the RFP process. It was very difficult, but I'm speaking on behalf of the Regional Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. This is the kind of effort that we've been expecting from Metro. A little surprised. I'm also a fellow TBAC member. I just spoke with a board member from TBAC who was not informed of the letter that was submitted this morning. So I don't think there's a consensus here, being a fellow TBAC member, of what Mr. Altaja was just speaking of. But foremost, anyways, thank you. It was a fantastic procurement. This is exactly what the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and TBAC has been looking for as far as these procurements, breaking them down and giving the small business an opportunity. By the way, three women-owned businesses did win it, and the majority of the people that are made up the teams are SBE certified through the Metro program. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atherley.
Good morning. I just wanted to also reiterate what Robert just said. We've been an active member of TBAC. We've followed the Metro program for a while now, and I would like to commend Metro and all its staff for taking the proactive steps of encouraging the small businesses. Caltrans has also been active through a CalMentor program, and under the direction of Mr. Murthy and Doug Failing, they have been very encouraging of the small businesses, and these procurements are a clear indication that the Metro is implementing a program that is not only fair, but it has also encouraged all the firms in the small business community. And I do disagree with what Mr. Ali Altaha just alleged. I'm certain that when you do your due diligence and talk to the TBAC board members, you will find that the process was very fair, very competitive, and I hope you continue to encourage small businesses. Okay,
Thank you. Okay, the item is before us, moved by Supervisor Molina. The chair will second without objection, so ordered. Next is item 5.
Item 5, Mr. Chairman, is again requesting approval to negotiate and award a 3-year time contract to Mars Services, who are the highest qualified proposer for construction management service for bus facilities, for an amount not to exceed $2.5 million, which includes 2 1-year options. Here again, we are requesting that CEO be authorized to issue individual task orders, and for some reason we cannot negotiate the agreement with the Mars, we be authorized to proceed with the next high qualified bidder to work with.
Okay, are there any questions? We do have someone sign up, Mr. Ali.
Good afternoon. Again, just to reiterate, the letter that I have presented to you has been signed by the chair of TBAG and the vice chair of TBAG. The issue here is that we've been taken by surprise with this move, and we did not have enough time to review anything that should have been publicly provided to the general public. The other thing I want to mention, the board letter, when I'm reading it today, it does talk about Government Code 4525, which I can assure you, based on the material that I'm reading, it is not fully compatible with that government code. NASA codes have also been violated, and this is a long-time policy by Caltrans to allow companies that are certified as a small or DBEs in different NASA codes, including filming, fashion design, and have them do construction management and design engineering in the state of California with Caltrans. And this is the reason why we are bringing this to your attention, because there are some serious issues here that need to be addressed, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, the item is before us, moved by Supervisor Molina, chair will second without objection, so ordered.
Item 6 is again request for approval to negotiate and award a 3-year contract with J.L. Patterson and Associate, and they were the highest qualified proposer for construction management service for rail facilities capital project. Here again, we are requesting approval for CEO to execute individual task orders, and we are also requesting approval, if we cannot negotiate with J.L. Patterson Associate, go to the next highest qualified bidder.
Okay. Mr. Ali again?
No comment.
Thank you. Okay, Chair, I'll move it. Seconded by Director Wilson without objection, so ordered. Item 7 is a report from CEO. Thank you.
That was one of my shorter reports.
I have public comment. No one signed up for public comment. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.